Now, our commentator, Rebecca Stevenson, who is Business Desk's Auckland Head of News. Kia ora, welcome, Rebecca.
Hi, Lynn, how are you?
I'm fine. If I mention the word supermarket pricing, I know ears are pricking up all over the country. Well, what do you want to look at specifically?
Well, I think, you know, any consumer could tell you that they weren't surprised at all with the Commerce Commission's draft report that came out that found, you know, prices are too high at the supermarket. And we do have a duopoly of Woolworths and Foodstuffs, you know, despite they have sort of fought against that tagging for a number of years. But one of the interesting things that I think has come out of the report that we're now seeing a bit more analysis of is whether or not actually it's a battle for land that's also playing into what's happening here in the supermarket story. So a good chunk of the Commerce Commission's market study into supermarkets has actually focused on the difficulties facing any potential new entrants to the market. And yep, we've seen evidence in that report that the markets, the margins the supermarkets are earning are significantly high. The Commerce Commission said they're consistently and materially higher than it would expect in a properly functioning market. But one of the things that we can also draw from that is if they are earning those lovely fat profits and margins are so good, wouldn't that be enticing to a new entrant? So economist for the New Zealand Institute, Eric Crampton, has done some analysis of that and has highlighted what he thinks is possibly a key thing that might be deterring someone from coming in and competing. And that is actually a battle for land. The Commerce Commission does say in its report that opening a new supermarket retail chain requires having a lot of sites near potential customers. And it talks about the problem of planning regulations. We know that new supermarket sites have to comply with zoning regulations within the area's district plan. And we know even if you're trying to build your own house or renovate a house, how difficult it can actually be to navigate that process and get a consent, let alone if you're building a big new retail space that's going to have loads of customers and lots of traffic management issues, for example. So if you wanted to come in and enter, you want to open lots of sites across the country, you know, consenting could tie you up for decades, and you might be dealing with multiple different councils, let alone trying to get access itself to the land. One of the things that the Commerce Commission did talk about is that existing supermarkets often already own potential sites that could be developed or previously owned them and have sold them off with encumbrances around the titles, which actually would stop any future owner against using the site as a supermarket. Or if the site is part of an existing shopping centre, the supermarket might also have an exclusivity restriction on those sites. So it's really just not a case of saying, hey, we want someone to come here. There's also a ton of logistics, red tape and land issues around being able to even open one up.
That's all legal though, isn't it?
Yeah, there's nothing. Well, one of the interesting things is the Commerce Commission does talk about that it thinks that those exclusivity covenants would be anti-competitive and therefore would be unenforceable, but I haven't seen any action around that. So perhaps that would be one area, you know, that could be looked at fairly swiftly, you know, trying to actually raise a claim or some action that would actually challenge those exclusivity contracts and try and get them overturned.
But are there times where it's actually perfectly reasonable to have an exclusivity covenant in a lease?
Well, I guess what the Commerce Commission is saying is that it's having much longer term and far reaching implications than potentially might be have thought at the time. And they're looking at it as a total suite of things that they're potentially going to challenge as part of this. I mean, they've certainly had them enforced for many years. I mean, you kind of can see it almost. I don't know what it's like around you, but I see it around me where I'm surrounded by one brand of supermarket. We know there's intense competition for those sites. And there's almost this like blocking plays that happen where the retailers will buy up sites and just hold on to them. And that's sort of thing so that their counterparts can't push in. We are seeing some more competition come into the market, though. You know, Costco has managed to secure a site, interestingly, out at Westgate in Auckland, which is owned by Retail Property Group. So that's outside of where we see a lot of the Countdowns, for example, in the malls. You know, they have done deals with those mall owners where they are considered the anchor tenants in those sites. So even for a massive player like Costco, they are having to look outside of a lot of those existing places where there's a lot of car parking and foot traffic, and they're having to go into essentially a new development out at Westgate because they need a lot of land, you know, and they need a lot of room for car parking, and there's a lot of restrictions around who can build what where, which we're seeing in our residential housing market as well.
Are there any rules around the exclusivity duration? I mean, I think that's been brought to our attention in the report of more than 20 years in some cases.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, as you've mentioned, you know, over 20 years, and it just seems very excessive. I guess I would just come back to the point is that, you know, in this ComCom report, they noted that in Section 28 of the Commerce Act, these anti-competitive covenants would be unenforceable. But at the moment, I guess each of them in the duopoly, Woolworths and Foodstuffs, have found an advantage in having those covenants against each other. So no one's been trying to scrap it out in court to get them overturned.
Land banking, of course, is something I think people find hard to take, you know, when things are so tight for land at the moment. But that would be, what, relatively common practice?
Yeah, they do talk about that. They say there's a difficulty for them to determine whether potential sites have been acquired with a view to very long-term growth or whether or not they've bought these sites as a way to just block entry. They say that the strategy from the major grocery retailers appears to have been using the covenants or the exclusivity covenants in leases to impede store development by their competitors. But they say they've seen few instances of the major grocery retailers buying and holding land for significant lengths of time for this purpose. The other thing that needs to be distinguished is there is a difference in the makeup of Foodstuffs versus Woolworths in competing for those sites. You know, Foodstuffs does run a cooperative model. So in terms of raising the cash to buy and hold land, they may have more difficulty in doing that compared with a major corporate like Woolworths. I mean, there's some really funny examples where you see supermarkets super close to each other. Countdown has had a couple of stores on the same street in Ponsonby and then ended up turning one of those stores into what's now a dark store distribution centre. You know, around me, I think I have about 5 or 6 Countdowns because they are an anchor tenant in the malls that are around me, plus also they've managed to snap up those central sites. Whereas you see with New World, they are often a little bit further afield and in sort of smaller sites. Another good example is in Napier, there used to be 2 Countdowns right next to each other that even shared a car park. So there definitely has sort of anecdotally seem to have been this sort of buying up the sites and turning them into supermarkets and then sort of retrenching going on. But without being inside those businesses, it's hard to know what their real intents were.
Well, it's quite a list. So talk us through the hurdles that a new supermarket chain eyeing up New Zealand currently would have to go through for this to become at least a possibility.
Yeah, so initially, if they are a big retailer, to buy land now, you know, we changed the rules in New Zealand for overseas people and businesses, you know, do have to jump hurdles to buy land in New Zealand. There's the Overseas Investment Act to overcome. And then, of course, there's just that zoning issue with all of the different local bodies for zoning. So you'd have to find the right properties with the right zonings. And then you'd have to find the right properties with the right zonings that didn't have any covenants on it, that didn't ban you from using it for a supermarket. Then once you did that, you'd have to start the consenting process, you know, and that can take a long time. And then you also, in the background, you need to have space and room for a distribution network as well. And we're New Zealand. We're not a very big market. You know, Auckland is really our only major significant city for a big retailer like a Costco and Aldi. So then when you're looking at dealing with that, the OIO, the councils, the zoning, and all of those restrictions, the issues around traffic management planning and things like that, it becomes a tricky picture.
Well, here we have a plea from Leah, who's a listener, saying, oh no, we don't need another overseas company making money out of Kiwis. We need an Aotearoa New Zealand-owned food market. Come on, Kiwis, don't let this happen. Take our power back as a consumer. So not everybody is pinning their hopes on an overseas chain coming through. But it looks like it's highly unlikely anyway.
Yeah, it looks really difficult. The one sort of bright spark I see on the horizon is Costco. And I think, you know, coming to Leah's point there, the interesting thing to me about Costco is Costco sells a lot of New Zealand products already. You know, I've been to a Costco store in Vancouver. It is full of New Zealand products, full of New Zealand cheese. And it's cheaper. You know, it's often cheaper to buy New Zealand products in a Costco store. So, yes, you may say, OK, it's a big US outlet. I think it has something like 250,000 employees. It's an absolutely massive beast of a thing. But it already does a lot of deals with New Zealand suppliers. It has a lot of grocery products from New Zealand already. So, you know, it can kind of weasel in there because it's already got a lot of those links and relationships. So what we're going to see with Costco is they're going to compete on grocery. They're going to compete on other things as well. They're going to compete on fuel. And they do all sorts of things. You know, they even sell hearing aids. So when you get a big player like Costco coming into the market, I think it will be quite interesting in the Auckland market where they're going to compete to see what that might do in terms of driving down prices at the New Zealand-owned stores as well. Foodstuffs is New Zealand owned, but Countdown is basically a part of Woolworths, which is the Australian operator. So in terms of an actual local, it's probably Foodstuffs, Farro Fresh, and those smaller operators that are really New Zealand owned.
Steve assures us that Napier's two Countdowns are still opposite each other.
I just hadn't been there for a while, yeah, but I remember it vividly. It seemed ridiculous.
So what needs to happen if there is a mood for change and more competition? What needs to happen in the short term, say, to tempt others into the market?
Well, Eric Crampton's report, he basically says that any supermarket operator that wanted to come into New Zealand should just become an automatic approval under the Overseas Investment Act. You know, he says if the government really wants to be serious and the Commerce Commission wants to be serious about encouraging competition, we need to let those competitors come in. He talks about, you know, making sure that the competition and the promotion of the competition is in the new resource management reforms that are coming through. And then we've also got our councils at the moment dealing with those resource management reforms as well. So we'd need to make sure that they don't try and hold on to restrictive zonings and those sorts of things to break some of those barriers around building these big retailers so they can come in.
I want to have a chat about building consents, Rebecca. I'm not sure if you heard Giles Beckford talking earlier about changes again, further government attempts to address the housing situation through the banks. But let's have a look at the building consent, because it's very interesting statistics, I thought.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Who knew what we were doing in the 70s? But it's taken us an awful lot of time to reach what was a peak of building consents in the 70s. So it was in the month of June we had a new record for consenting. We had a year-on-year increase in consents of 18%. And June was the fourth consecutive month of record approvals for consents. And the previous high was about 40,000 dwellings consented in February 1974. So that national total for the month was 44,299 new home consents for the past 12 months. I guess one of the interesting things that stood out to me was just the amount of multi-home units or apartments. There was 19,777 approvals in those consents, which was a 28% increase on the previous year. New standalone houses were about 24,000, although those did increase to 11% year on year. So we're definitely seeing a lot more consents coming through, which is really pleasing.
Is that staggered throughout the country, do you know?
Auckland is out in the lead with that consenting. They had a 29% increase in Auckland for the year ended June 2021. That's just that multi-units building that's happening in Auckland. So that was about two-thirds of new homes in Auckland. in comparison, I think it was about a 30% increase in multi-unit consents outside of Auckland. So it's really fascinating, but there will be potentially a few things that are going to hold us up. You know, we've spoken a bit in the past about building supplies, but we've got labour shortages and material shortages looming, which could put a brake on the building. But at the moment, the paperwork is happening and that's going through.
He's really interested to pick up on that issue of multi-units. Starting to see a lot of that actually around Wellington too. And this seems to be the bulk of it now, you know, fewer standalone homes. And that's what really would have been built, I imagine, in the 1970s, these standalone units, rather than the multi-units.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you drive around Auckland, for example, now we're seeing a lot more of what I would consider sort of UK-style terraced housing, which just makes a lot more sense. You know, you get a lot more housing for your buck on the site. They are multi-levels, they might be attached, there's only the two end units that, you know, have an outside wall where you're not sharing with a neighbour. But it just, the building makes it more efficient, it makes it more affordable, you can get more people living on these sections, which makes a lot more sense, and that's the way we need to speed up our housing. You know, we do need to get over this idea of we only want to live in standalone houses and recognise that to get more people into owning their own homes, we need more multi-unit properties.
Even, of course, if we had more tradies and we had more resources, and of course, you know, we don't know with COVID the limitation now on getting materials through even for house renovations. I mean, these are big, big breaks on progress with these consents, aren't they?
Yeah, there's a global housing boom, effectively. I mean, in the wake of COVID, governments have been cranking out their money machines, and people and companies, businesses, governments are, you know, cranking out cash, and there's a lot of infrastructure building going on, a lot of building going on, and we have to compete in that market. So, yeah, you know, we've seen supply constraints for all sorts of things. You hear about it, you know, wiring. You know, we obviously saw wood blew up as an issue earlier in the year. We do have to compete for these products, and yeah, and then that, you know, pushes the price up as well. And then on top of that, you have all the problems with shipping and shipping costs rising and the inability to get containers and things like that. So it is a really complex picture.
You've started something with Costco, Rebecca. There's lots of, and people are very divided. So we've got David saying he goes and winters in Alaska where they've got Costco. He said Costco rocks. He said I can buy New Zealand produce cheaper in Alaska than I can at any New World or Countdown here. But at the same time, Linda says, look, it's not a bright spark on anyone's horizon. More cars, huge car parks, urban deserts, overseas supply chain dependency. Really, so very divided on the benefits of this.
Yeah, Costco is going to be fascinating. It is definitely not for everyone. You know, I wouldn't do my regular shop probably at Costco all the time. A, people are going to have to drive to it. It is out at Westgate, but that was one of the issues, you know, in them finding a site. That was the site that they could find. It is a bit of a sprawly site out to Westgate, but, you know, that will draw a huge growing population around Kumu and northwest Auckland and Rodney and that area out west. I think some people will probably drive across to it. Everything in there is jumbo-sized. It's quite fascinating. It definitely is more of a kind of a bulk retailer, you know, huge jars of mayonnaise, you know, giant muffins, you know, huge packs of Toblerone bars, for example.
Supersize everything, is it?
It is. It's huge, you know. So you kind of, I went there and thought, oh, I might like a Toblerone. I ended up taking a 12-pack home and had to do an intervention on myself, basically. So it is a big bulk retailer. It's for big cars, big boots. Everything's kind of giant, but the price points are very low, and their fresh fruit and grocery stuff is great product. You know, I think it'll be really interesting to see what it might do around the prices for fruit and vegetables, because it's very competitive, because it is just such a big player.
The texts are pouring also on the houses. We've got somebody saying we need a Ministry of Works. Gosh, I remember the Ministry of Works to build houses on a large scale. And I don't know, is there sense to that? I guess we won't go back to the past, but
I think that was raised. Actually, people have raised the Ministry of Works, and I just don't think this government has shown any interest in that at all. They're obviously trying to make changes with the Resource Management Acts, and we're just seeing, I guess, a little bit of a battle at the moment between how the councils are attempting to interpret what this all might mean. Seeing some kind of worrying signs out of some of the councils like Auckland and Wellington, you know, we're getting feedback from planners that the council planners seem to be still looking at why not to do things, why not to allow things, as opposed to trying to unleash more land and let people build more. So it's going to be really fascinating. You know, the government is trying to make changes, but will they be stymied by councils?
Just going to finish with this. I know we've been, bouncing all over the place with the text, but I thought this was quite a nice one to finish with. And this is looking at the supermarkets. Find it. Oh, no, you've broken the text machine. It's gone crazy. I can't find it. But it's kind of arguing that, you know, we should enhance the role of small independent grocery stores, which have been almost eliminated by the supermarkets. We don't need more supermarkets. Let's have local walkable neighbourhood shops thriving again. So lots of opinions coming through, Rebecca. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Great to talk to you.
Bye.
Rebecca Stevenson is the Head of News at Business Desk.